This is the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show, number 45. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampath from Australia. Coming up on the show, we explore into the theme of fielding and wicketkeeping. Ian Pond shares another fast-bowling tip with us, and we also answer your questions for this week. Well, David, unless you've magically surrendered your team's performances and your form, or something bad really happened, I'm guessing you would have won the league this week.
That's right, yeah, very good news all round, because we did manage to win our championship, our second division championship, second team championship, third division. It was a good game, and then we had a very good night, so I'm feeling a little bit worse for wear, Kevin. You're going to have to treat me with kid gloves today.
That's all right, I'm sure it's understandable if you win it.
So let me tell you about the game anyway. So we batted first, and our normal captain was away, so we had a senior player come down for the first team to captain us.
Yeah.
He is a very experienced captain. It was a very poor pitch, but we managed to sort of stay in the game, bat quite slowly, but we got to 160, which was quite a good quite a good score, we thought, and he declared, which was bold. I mean, okay, there was only an over left, but he declared with an over to go, and that confused the opposition quite a lot. And then we started very poorly. We bowled as if we were going to bowl them out easily, and we weren't. We were just going through the motions almost, and they got 50 in no time. They got to 50 in 8 over, 7 over, something like that. And we were really struggling. We thought, oh, they're going to thrash us here. And then we got a lucky wicket. A guy had a bit of a swing at a wide one, and hit it up in the air, and our backward point managed to pull off a one-handed catch. So, very skillful catch it was, to be fair to him. But it was a bit of luck because it wasn't a great ball. And the captain got us all in and said, come on, you know, we've got to try here. They're not going to roll over. We've got to really show some aggression and really get the bowlers going here. And to be fair, we did, and one bowler got 6 wickets and he bowled very well, and one bowler at the other end was extremely lucky not to get more. He got 3 and he bowled bowled one of the best spells of medium pace bowling I've ever kept to. The chap who was facing, it was a little spell of about 5 overs where he went for about 2 runs, and it ended up with him getting the wicket of this chap who just couldn't get a bat on it. Literally, it was every ball he was either beating the bat, or if it was straight, he was just about getting a bat on it. So it was a brilliant spell of brilliance. I mean, it wasn't fast. He's not a fast bowler, but he's tall, so he gets bounce. And the wicket wasn't too great. The wicket was a bit up and down, a little bit slow, stopping in the pitch. He bowled one that was just short of a length, and it just reared up and hit this guy on the head. So, you know, it's very. It wasn't a great pitch. But he just used the conditions brilliantly. A bit of swing, bit of seam movement, lots of bounce. It was absolutely brilliant to watch. And we took the last wicket, and the celebrations began.
And they'll go on for another week.
Hopefully. So that's the end of my season now, Kev. We've still got a month left. We've got all the one-day internationals, of course, haven't we? England, Australia to look forward to.
That's
my season over now, so gonna have nothing to do for a few months.
I'm sure you've earned a well-earned break, David.
Yeah,
we've got about a week left for our season, and really about 2 weeks actually. We can't wait to get into it, because all the hype before the season, everyone's been training pretty hard, so just to see like what our hard work, if it's paid off or if we needed more work, it's going to be really interesting to see. But staying on the topic for today, David, which is fielding and wicket keeping, what is the transfer, a similarity between throwing and bowling? I don't know if I think I might have heard Ian Hunt mention this somewhere, but I've heard Mike Young, the Australian fielding coach, mention this, because he used to be a baseball coach, and he says that in cricket, the physics between bowling and throwing are similar, because it's basically the same movements and basically the same muscles used as well. I mean, there's a mobility of the hip, the shoulder, rotation of the shoulders, and if you watch the top cricketers, David, especially the fast bowlers, they seem to have really good throwing arms. So do you think that fast bowlers in general have sort of an advantage in throwing?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same movement. As long as you're technically the same with your throwing and your bowling, then yeah, you do have an advantage if you're a fast bowler. I mean, the only difference really is that you have a bit of a longer run up with when you're bowling, and you have to keep your arms straight. In terms of the transfer of energy, which that's what it's all about, the transfer of energy from the ground through your body into the ball, that's exactly the same, really. I mean, you know, whether you're pitching in baseball, throwing a cricket ball, throwing a javelin, bowling, it's all, biomechanically speaking, very similar. So, yeah, it's just a matter of optimizing your technique to make sure that you can get the ball in as quickly and accurately as possible.
And would you say there's sort of the technique and movements in batting, do they transfer over to fielding as well at times?
I wouldn't say batting as much, no, because it's a different thing. You know, you're not propelling an object away from you, you're holding a cricket bat and you're making contact, so that's slightly different, I would say. You know, you're transferring your weight forward, so the energy's still going into the ball, say with a drive shot, for example. But you know, biomechanically it's completely different, because you're holding an object, you're striking an object rather than throwing it. So, you know, that is a different thing.
So from our bowling and fielding conversation, we go to another bowling guru, who's Ian Pond, and he's also a Pitch Vision Academy coach, and he has this week a fast bowling tip for us. So let's have a listen to what he has to say.
Thanks for coming on the show, Ian.
Okay.
Got a question from Rick this week. And Rick says that he's currently coaching in Mumbai. And he says a lot of the young seamers that he coaches share the problem of hopping into the delivery stride rather than the conventional bound. I'm reducing the action to the mechanics of running and turning this run into a natural bound, but the players are struggling to change. Is there an age at which you would recommend leaving a bowler as a hopper? And any tips on how to best practice the bound and transfer to the completed run-up and action? They're all losing momentum through the crease.
Right, okay. Well, what I would say there is the difficulty for a lot of youngsters is understanding that the bowling action is totally separate from the run-up. And let me explain that in detail. I get, a good deal of young lads who 3 or 4 paces from the crease start to lift their arms up to bowl. So they're preparing to bowl way too early. And instead of running to the crease and then just jumping into their action, what they're doing is they're running up and they're preparing to bowl 2 or 3 strides from their takeoff, from their bound, in other words. And I think if you can learn as a coach to separate the bowling action from the run-up, it's a lot easier for the youngsters to understand. So just get them to run up to a point and then jump into position rather than hop. But the question sounded like the kids had problems actually jumping. Yeah. So what I would say is that you get into practice from a static position. So if they're a right arm bowler, they'd stand with all their weight on their left leg and then literally jump over a stream or a bridge. I was always taught that as a kid, just to jump over and then land on the other leg. So you, as a right arm bowler, you stand on your left leg and you jump over an imaginary stream and land on your right foot. So you create a jump, a leap. What you don't do is you don't then hop from the same foot and land on the same foot, which I assume is what he's saying. They're hopping from the same foot. Or worse, or just as bad, is instead of picking their knees up to jump, they're trying to jump with their arms in some way. They're trying to throw their arms in the air and their legs stay straight like a bunny hop. So the work to be done is strip out the run-up, because the run-up is just the run-up. Get to the bound position, which will be one stride from the crease, and get them to almost rock backwards and forwards like you see on a long jumper just about to take the run up for a long jump in the Olympics. Is they're rocking backwards and forwards. Get them to do that and then just jump from left foot to right foot and land in the bowling position on back foot, bowling position, and just practice that and then build it backwards with a jog through drill and then a run up and so on. Then you're away. But again, with all of these changes, David, that takes time and you need to eliminate anything else that could be putting them off. Perhaps even take the cricket ball out of their hands so they don't even feel that they're bowling. They're just jumping and getting used to that feeling of jumping. But that's what I would do. I do have a couple of kids who do that, and that's exactly the drill I do with them as I get them to jump over a little miniature stream or something.
Thank you, Ian, for your time. And if you want coaching from Ian Pond, you can access Pitch Vision Academy's How to Bowl Faster coaching course on www.pitchvision.com/academy. Welcome to the listeners' questions section, and this week's theme is fielding and wicket-keeping. And as always, you can tap into the wealth of knowledge on Pitch Vision in the fielding coaching course by Derek Randall on www.pitchvision.com/academy. Well, David, our first question is from Simon, and he's got a keeper's question, so I'm sure that's right in your area.
Yeah.
And he says, how do you know what to do when you have to stand up or stand back when keeping to medium paces? David, you mentioned that you recently kept to that medium pacer in your team. How do you determine when to stand up or stand back? Is it mainly first on whether you can see the ball well enough to stand up and then based on the situation, or how do you go about it?
Well, there's six things that I think about when I'm thinking about whether to stand up or not. The first thing is how fast is the bowler, because there's no point in trying to do it. There's no point in standing back if the bowler's so slow that you're not. Because when we're talking about medium pace, it could be anything from just slightly faster than a spinner to almost quick, you know, fast medium, say. So the first thing you have to decide is, can you do it? And, you know, the pace is going to be the obvious thing, because it's much harder to stand up to a quicker bowler than it is to a slower bowler.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing I think about. And then, I mean, most of the time, certainly the level I play, most of the time you don't really have to think about that too much, because most bowlers you can stand up to.
Yeah.
The second thing that I think about is the bowler accurate enough for you to stand up? Because it's no good standing up to a relatively quick medium pacer, and you know that you can, but he's throwing everything down the leg side.
Yeah.
Because you know, you're just going to give away too many buys to make it worthwhile. The third thing I think of is how much the ball's moving around, because if it's swinging, especially swinging away, you're probably better off standing back for the edge rather than trying to stand up, because it's harder to take a catch standing up. I mean, you should still be able to do it, but you get less. There's less of a window of opportunity. If it's a thicker edge, you can catch the thicker edge if it's swinging or seaming around a bit. So you've got to think of that. You've got to look at the batsman, tactically speaking, if you want to stand up for tactical reasons, then the reason you would do that is if the batsman is either walking down the wicket to your medium pacer or standing out of his crease. Because if he's doing those things, then he's trying to aggressively get onto the front foot against your medium pace bowler. They're trying to drive them. You don't want them to be able to do that. You want to restrict them so you can come up to the crease and stand up to him.
Yeah.
So that's important. And also, you know, you've got to look at the scoreboard, because, you know, you never know if you stand up and, you know, you might get a couple of four buys go past. It's possible, especially if the ball's moving around a bit. Then you've got to look at the scoreboard. If it's very tight, then you probably wouldn't want to risk. You know, you want to balance out the benefit of the stumping with the risk of those extra extra buys going. And that really is that really is the reason that you stand up, to put the batsman under pressure, because I don't think any batsman likes the wicketkeeper standing up. It makes them feel under more pressure, and it gives you the opportunity to get a stumping, even if the batsman never leaves his crease. He's one of those batsmen who keeps his foot down all the time. Just that slight doubt in his mind might be enough to make him make a mistake. The next thing that I think about is how confident are you? Because there's no point in doing it if you don't think you can. Stick a helmet on if you're worried about safety. I wear a helmet standing up, and you know that gives you a lot more confidence. And if you're thinking if as the bowler's running, it's like anything really. If the bowler's running in, you're thinking, "Oh God, I hope it doesn't come to me," or you know, it's you know, I've only got a 50% chance of catching this. Even if he leaves it, then you haven't got the confidence. Don't do it. And then the last thing you want to do, that I might ask you about this yourself, Kev, is the bowler, because some bowlers hate it. Some bowlers absolutely hate it. There's one bowler in my team, he hates me standing up to him, even though I can. He hates it. So I don't. I don't very rarely. I mean, I might do it if the batsman's standing way out of his crease, for you know, just to get him back into his crease. But generally speaking, I won't do it, because he doesn't like it. And he can bowl quite medium pace sometimes. He can be, you know, he can be pretty military medium, and he's the type of bowler who would have, you know, should have the keeper standing up to him sometimes. And then sometimes he can bowl quite quick, and it's right to stay back. So what do you think about that, Kevin? Did you ever have a keeper stand up to you? And if you do, what do you feel about it?
I used to have a keeper stand up to me when I was in the junior grades, but not so much anymore. But I reckon if my keeper, who's a good mate of mine, came and asked me if he could stand up to me, I'd tell him to politely go away. Because as a bowler, I think, as you said, bowlers do get offended when some bowlers get offended when the keeper's asked to stand up. Because it's sort of saying you're bowling too slow. That's what it comes into our minds. But I do see the benefits. Like now and then, if the batsmen are really outside their crease and someone came up to me and told me that, should I stand up to you, then I wouldn't mind that at the moment. But it hasn't happened recently, David, so maybe when that happens, I'll let you know about how I feel.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pride. And it's also with wicketkeepers as well. It's a bit of a pride thing with wicketkeepers, because you've got the bowler who's thinking, well, I don't want the keeper standing up because that means I'm not quick. But then on the other hand, you've got the wicketkeeper saying, well, I don't want to stand back because that means I'm not, you know, I'm only a backstop. Then I'm taking out the stumping, and I'm not showing off all my skills to their maximum.
Yeah.
So you've got to be careful about that, you know, that side of things. I think some wicketkeepers stand up too quickly. They don't think about it. They just think, I can stand up this bloke, so therefore I will. And that isn't necessarily. I mean, you can stand up to relatively quick bowling, especially on slow pitches. Yeah. You can stand up to relatively quick bowling if the bowling is accurate. But a lot of keepers, they just will automatically go and stand up, and they won't think about, say, the match situation. You know, they might give away some buys, even if they're very good keepers. You know, if someone throws it down the leg side, it's hard. You know, it is hard, and no one stops everything down the leg side. So, you know, you've got to you have got to think about it and balance it out and take all those factors into account.
On that point, I think that it can improve a bowler's performance at times as well, because in international cricket, if you remember Nathan Bracken, his main weapon was changing his pace. Mm-hmm. And what batsmen used to do was stand outside their crease or walk up to him and just bludgeon him down the ground. So what Gilchrist used to do was come up, and he did that a lot during the end of his career, come up to Nathan Bracken from the start of his innings. So batsmen were reluctant to go out of his crease, and that's why Bracken became a really good ODI bowler, because of their tentativeness in going out of the crease. So, yeah, it could help a bowler's performance at times as well.
Yeah, I think so, especially in those sort of limited over chase type situations.
Yeah.
It makes makes a difference to the batsman to feel cramped up with the not having the option of being able to come down the wicket or stand out of your crease. It makes a big difference, and it's very popular now in international cricket, isn't it? I mean, they all do it now. All the top international wicketkeepers will stand up to pretty much everyone except the fastest bowlers, and I like that.
That's right.
I like seeing that, because standing up is an art. It is definitely art, you know. I'd like to see it as much as possible.
All right, David. Our next question is from Mujtaba from India, and he says, I'm weak when taking skyers. I don't know why, but I find it difficult to take catches when the ball is high in the air. And usually two things happen. Either my hands are in the wrong position to take the catch, as the ball hits my fingers and falls down, or the ball hits my palm and bounces out. How do I avoid these mistakes and improve my catching? Well, David, I was reading a book recently, and they said there's two ways to catch a high ball. And they said there's an English way and there's an Australian way. And apparently the Australian way is with your fingers pointed up, and the English way is with the fingers pointed, well, not down, but sort of across. And I don't know how accurate that is. I don't know if people actually do that in the two different countries, but personally, mine are pointed up when it's high. But would, in terms of sort of getting it right, would it mean more practice and getting your confidence up?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, just to explain the difference between the Australian and the English method, is the Australian, or they sometimes call it the baseball method, is your palms facing away from your body, which is a good way to catch, a comfortable way to catch, and the English method is with your palms facing towards your body, and you catch the ball and you pull it in towards your chest. So either of those two methods are fine, and some people are more comfortable with the Australian way, some people are more comfortable with the English way. It doesn't really make any difference. Yeah. They're both effective. So, so what's it down to? Well, yeah, the key, I think, is to take as many high catches as you can, really. I mean, start by working on your technique with a tennis ball. There's no harm in practicing with a tennis ball. Tennis balls are harder to catch than cricket balls, but they don't hurt. Yeah. So you can get the technique right. You can get the technique down, because the tennis ball will bounce out of your hand a lot easier than a cricket ball will. So if someone's throwing tennis balls up in the air to you and you're catching, you're getting the technique right, you're getting lovely hand position and all the rest of it, and then you can move on to a cricket ball, or move back to a cricket ball, I should say, and start catching the cricket ball. And you'll find that the cricket ball's then easier to catch than the tennis ball, because it's not bouncing out of your hand. You don't have to be quite so quite so careful with it, if you like. You know, you've got a bit more room for manoeuvre. So practice is the important thing. And of course, the other thing that practice gives you is confidence. Because it sounds like, to me, that if it's either hitting your fingers or bouncing out of your palm, you're all tensed up. You're getting all stressed out about it. Mm. You don't want the ball to come to you. When it does come to you, you don't want to catch it. You think, oh God, I've got to catch it. And then when it does arrive, you're all tense, your shoulders are hunched, you're getting in all the wrong positions, you're not really watching the ball properly, and down it goes. So the key there is, I mean, yes, practice, get your technique right, because that'll give you confidence in the first place. But then after that, make sure that when you're in the field that you want the ball to come to you. Really focus on thinking about wanting the ball to come to you, wanting the catch. And when the ball goes up in the air and you think, right, that's coming to me, thinking, I'm going to catch this. Not, oh, I hope I don't drop this, but think, here we go, I'm going to catch this one.
Yeah.
And if you do that, if you can keep your mind clear, which is hard to do, especially if, you know, you've dropped a few in the past. You know, the more you drop, the harder it becomes to catch the next one, at least mentally.
Yeah.
But keep faith in yourself, and then just respond to the ball as it arrives, and that'll get you more catches. The other trick is, always imagine yourself catching in slow motion, because that relaxes you for some reason. I'm not quite sure why. It's a tip I heard a while back, but you just imagine it all happening in slow motion, and it obviously don't catch in slow motion, you'll miss it by miles, but you imagine you imagine almost like time is slowing down as the ball comes into your hands, and then it becomes a lot easier, because it always looks a lot easier in slow motion, doesn't it, on the telly, than it does in full speed. Just imagine it in slow motion. That works. That can build up your confidence sometimes as well.
Well, our next question is from Mustaba again, David, and he says, when the pitch is highly unpredictable, that is, unpredictable bounce and turn, and the ball cuts off the surface rapidly, how do I make sure that you don't give away buys and don't drop catches? And on pitches with low bounce, how do you improve keeping, as the balls don't come to your gloves but roll on towards you quickly? Now, David, first of all, does this mean he would have to practice or get his hand-eye coordination, so sort of hone on those skills? And does it also come down to experience? Because I know that when young keepers go over to India or the subcontinent and they tend to struggle, the commentators keep saying that it's because they're not used to it. Give it a couple of years and they'll become pros at sort of keeping those type of wickets. So is it about experience, or is it more about practicing hand-eye coordination?
Yeah, it is definitely about experience. I mean, the problem with practicing hand-eye coordination is it's never quite the same as what you'd experience with an unpredictable pitch. So it's a bit difficult to practice hand-eye coordination in an accurate way. So the only way to really practice is to play on those pitches. But the key really is to just it sounds too simple, but the key is to watch the ball.
Yeah.
Because if you're watching the ball all the way, it's quite hard to get wrong, especially when you're standing back, because you've got the time to see the deviation in the bounce. It's a bit harder.
Yeah.
It's a bit harder standing up. He mentioned bounce and turn. So to me, I imagine him, you know, playing on an unpredictable pitch with a spinner bowling.
Yeah.
That becomes a bit harder, and sometimes that can take a while to adjust. I know I played a game earlier this season where our spinner, who gets a lot of bounce, was getting so much bounce that everything was up around my chest height, bouncing over the stumps at my chest height. Now that's quite hard when you're standing up, because you can't really reverse your hands to do a reverse hands catch, and you can't really sway out the way to do a sideways catch. So you kind of, you know, that's, you have to kind of just manage to get over the ball almost by jumping up in the air and catching it. So that it takes time to adjust to that.
Yeah.
But then you get this sense, certainly for me as a wicketkeeper, you get this sense of where roughly, you know, the air, even with an unpredictable pitch, you get this sense of roughly where, of the area where the ball is going to go. You know, how much turn he's getting, how much bounce he's getting, and you sort of have a, it's almost like a zone. You roughly know a zone where the ball's going to be. And then, so instead of thinking it could go anywhere, and you're not thinking about it could go anywhere, you're more thinking of there's an offside zone and a leg side zone almost, and you know roughly the ball's going to be in that area. The difficult part is if the ball pitches and you can't see it because it's behind the batsman for some reason, it's going down the leg side and you're waiting for it on the offside, waiting to see it bounce, so then you can go. That's the technique for leg side takes. Stay on the offside as long as possible, watch the ball bounce, and then go. Because as soon as you see it pitched, you get an idea of what it's going to do, whether it's going to shoot along the ground, fly up in the air, whatever. But you can't always do that. And even then, you can't always necessarily accurately judge it, because you've only got a fraction of a second after it bounces to get across there. So that can be more difficult. And that really, there's not a lot you can do about that. I mean, there's only, you can't see where the ball's going. So you've just got to guess. You've just got to do your best to make a guess. And the only way to improve at that is to practice. I mean, if you can get someone, if you're lucky enough to be able to practice with a bowling machine and someone to stand there padded up with a bat, you know, that's brilliant. But, you know, how easy is that to get? Because even throwdowns aren't really suitable for that. And you don't want to be doing it with a bowler, really, because the bowler's not going to be accurate enough. So you'd need some sort of bowling machine to do it accurately, and you need a batsman standing there as well, so you know not a lot of people would be able to practice that. So if you can practice it, but if you can't, then it's just a matter of watching the ball as closely as you can and sort of imagine, you know, you have to imagine the line of the ball, even on the offside, you have to imagine the line and what happens after it deviates. The other question was pitches with low bounce.
Yeah.
How do you improve your keeping as the balls don't come into your gloves that roll along the ground? Well, that is a nightmare. Because, first of all, they don't usually roll along the ground all the time. I mean, if they did, that would be a pretty horrible pitch. So hopefully you're never in that situation. I mean, if it's keeping low all the time, then stand a little bit closer. That's my first tip. Make sure you're standing close enough. Because what you tend to find is a lot of keepers stand a little bit too far back. They're worried. Yeah. They're worried that it's going to fly through, and they stand just maybe a pace or two paces too far back, and it's coming through on the on the bounce to them. Well, that's, you know, that's taking a risk. So take a step forward, take two steps forward, take three steps forward. If you're so close that you might as well stand up, then stand up. If you get to the point where you think, there's no point in me standing back here, then stand up. However, if you get the odd one which scoots along the ground, then that's more difficult, really, because you're standing in your normal position, the ball's coming through at the normal height, whatever the comfortable height is for you. You know, some wicketkeepers like to catch sort of at ankle height, some wicketkeepers like to catch more at sort of thigh height, knee height, that kind of thing. That's a personal preference. If you're catching them most of them, the odd one scoots along the ground, then you've got a bit more of a problem. The technique is to assume the long barrier position. So you get your body behind the ball. So if it scuttles, if it flies off, because sometimes what happens is the ball pitches, it goes past the batsman or they leave it, and then it doesn't carry to you, but it only pitches once. So it's sort of the second, it's coming to you on the second bounce. I mean, that second bounce could go anywhere. Yeah. It could hit the seam, or it could roll on the ground, or it could stick into the turf or do anything. So get your body behind the ball is the key there. Watch the ball into your gloves as much as you can, and just get behind it. There's no shame in letting the ball hit you, you know, and it bounces off the first slip or something. That's okay, as long as you've stopped it. You know, no one would expect you to do a perfectly clean take on those things. So just be happy with stopping balls like that, really. And if you get it into your gloves, all the better. But the main thing is to just get behind balls like that. And it's not fun. I've kept on pitches like that. It's not fun because you get bruised and you get battered, and you know, you miss balls, and it makes you look a bit silly. But really, you've just got to do it as good as you can. Sometimes it can be a bit of a thankless task keeping wicket.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'd rather be doing that than anything else.
Well, this week's questions are in association with the fielding and wicket-keeping theme for this week. And as always, you can tap into the wealth of knowledge on Pitch Vision in the fielding coaching course by Derek Randall on www.pitchvision.com/academy. Don't forget that you can catch all the articles, updates, forums, and anything you hear about on the show on www.pitchvision.com. Stay tuned for our next show on the 11th of September, with the theme being laws and umpiring. And so if you have any questions, and I'm sure you have heaps of questions on this, or any feedback to add to that, or in general, please email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you next time. So signing off from Australia, this is Kevin Samper.
And this is David Hinchliffe in the UK.
The My Cricket Coach Show is a copyright-protected production for Pitch Vision. For more information, please visit pitchvision.com.